Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Ecom Sales Tax Podcast, where we help e-commerce companies deal with sales tax without losing their business. I'm your host, Andy Johnson. I'm a CPA. My co-host is Dan Peisner. Hey, Dan.
Hey there, Andy.
Dan is an authority on all tax matters, state and local tax matters, having to do with e-commerce businesses. And Dan is also my co-author on the AICPA multi-state income tax training course. So Dan, welcome. I think I already said welcome to you.
Always happy to be welcomed again.
Double welcome. Well, Dan, can you just do a quick roundup of, I don't want to this podcast to be all about Wayfair and keeping up to date on every little development there, but can you just give us an update on where we stand? What's the latest on how states are adapting to the Wayfair decision?
Well, Andy, we've seen a few more of the smaller states kind of jump on board. Utah is going to be coming online, I think, early next year. Minnesota is going to has announced that they're going to require registration and collection as of October. The big question for Minnesota is whether Amazon is going to be as a facilitator be required to collect and remit on behalf of all of the Minnesota sellers, as we've seen in Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and Washington now. As far as the bigger states go, we've now seen Texas has announced that they're looking at what they need to do in order to require remote seller collection. And they've said they expect to have that process conclude sometime middle of next year. So no need to rush out and do a Texas registration as of right now, unless you are selling on Amazon and have inventory, obviously. As of yet, we have not seen anything formal out of Florida. California, there's been some unofficial leaks, but nothing official as of yet. They seem to be struggling mightily with their new sales tax system. So my informal objective guess is probably October for them, if they can get their ducks in a row, but they could surprise us and do it earlier.
So what's your general feeling on what states are going to do? You're talking about Hawaii came out and said they were going to be retroactive. And
originally Hawaii came out with, and their tax is a little bit different, but they came out and they said that, yes, we want everybody to have to register as of July 1st, 2018. They kind of changed their law in advance, and they said, we're going to amnesty all of the tax for the first half of the year and say that you can remit it without paying penalty or interest, so, which in effect would have been one of the first states to go retroactive in the wake of Wayfair. They changed their minds, coincidentally, right around the time the U.S. House Judiciary Committee decided to set a meeting on Wayfair. The thinking is that these states are certainly trying to stretch their legs a little bit and expand their taxing authority, but they're still worried about getting the attention of Congress, at least until Mr. Goodlatte has finally retired. Keeping in mind, Congress is still the one with the power to kind of rain on their parade a little bit.
Right. So in general, what the states got in Wayfair is the best possible deal they could have gotten. And you would think that most states don't want to get slaughtered, right? So what do they say, don't be a pig but not a hog or something like that. And what Hawaii was trying to do is go retroactive, which is arguably possible under the Supreme Court ruling, because they talked about that as a possibility. But you might be inviting Congress to come in and implement something way less favorable than the Wayfair decision.
Yeah. I mean, I've had one legal expert I heard talk on the matter of Wayfair, and the decision actually said Kennedy gave them a blueprint to go retroactive if they wanted to. On the one hand, he did he made a statement regarding the undue burdens on the state and praised the no retroactivity portion of South Dakota. On the other hand, his language on Quill was so strong, and the fact that he said that it was the state should not be able to rely upon that, and that it was bad law, basically set a, if a state wanted to go retroactive, the way he wrote that decision really did leave the door open. Now, this was an attorney, and as we know, a lot of attorneys will be conservative when advising people, but he certainly is an expert well enough to know his stuff, and this is definitely a concern. And I think one of the forces out there that really is preventing some of the states from going retroactive is the U.S. potential of congressional intervention. With the exception of Hawaii, I'm not aware of any other state that has attempted to go retroactive as of yet. Every state that has announced this has announced prospective only thus far. And as okay. I said, Hawaii is now prospective.
Yeah, so that's what we would expect. It's not easy for Congress to act, so it would seem like most states would enact the South Dakota version and probably get away with it just fine. All right, Dan, so thanks for that quick update on Wayfair developments. I know that you're staying on top of that and updating our charts for our subscribers. So excellent. Thank you. Dan, I have a couple of other things I'd like to consider. Software companies that sell software would certainly be considered e-commerce, right?
Certainly.
By the very definition. So I have a question from a client or a prospective client. And then I know you have a question, and so let's talk about that. First question is, having to do with software, several states tax canned software differently than custom software. What's the difference? So Dan, I'm going to give you a typical statute. I think this is Missouri statute. And then you can comment about whether or not you see differences in, and if so, what are they in other states? So custom software is defined as programs developed to the special order of a customer. The real object sought by a purchaser is the service of the seller and not the property produced by the service of the seller. So basically what it's saying is software that you hire to a company to create for you from scratch to your specifications is pretty clearly custom software. Agreed?
Agreed with a caveat.
Thank you.
The caveat and the difference kind of where the rubber is going to meet the road in the state statutes with custom software is some states, when they talk about custom and being a service, the whole thing's got to be from scratch. Whereas other states will allow some seed coding or reuse of some modules. And then the question of when you start with quote unquote canned software and make a modification. So you have a common one would be you have an Oracle implementation and you have somebody come in and write a custom module for it. That module is an add-on. And some states will say, as long as you separately state that custom work, then that's that service, and that may not be taxable. Others are going to take the approach, well, the whole thing's not custom, and it may very well make it taxable. So you have to, you got to carefully read the state statutes in that regard.
Agreed. Always. Is there a case where you'd recommend non-careful reading of the state statute?
Only if you like making large donations to the states, in which case, have at it.
So I gave you the definition of custom software. Canned software is, quote, standardized programs purchased off the shelf or programs of general application developed for sale to and used by many different customers with little or no modifications. So Under that type of distinction, most popular software programs would be considered canned software.
That is correct.
Anything you'd like to add to that?
Yes. Going in and changing a bunch of settings does not constitute significant modification. The states have all heard that one before. I don't recommend trying it.
Gotcha. All right. Our next question came to us also from a client in the software world. I think they sell tangible goods and selling some software. So we've talked about custom and canned software, and that has a lot of relevance still today, but now we're moving into a world of cloud computing. So Dan, what was their question?
The question is quite simply, we're starting to see some clients that are traditional Amazon FBA sellers. They're traditionally in the world of tangible personal property, and now they're starting to sell. Maybe they've got the property they sell has a software component to it, and they need they're looking into software as a service. The states have a little bit of a different treatment for it, assuming that the state is even deemed to really define it as of yet. One of the issues that you're seeing with software as a service is it's a relatively new area. A lot of the states are, in a lot of cases, are trying to make do with statutes that were written back in the 70s and 80s and may not have quite caught up to the digital age as of yet. And they're trying to pick it. They're trying to fit a round peg into a square rusted hole.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about the difference between canned software and custom software. But when we get into SaaS or cloud computing as a broader category, you actually also need to analyze it whether or not it's considered the sale of a piece of property, tangible property, or as a service, right? It could be a service. I'm including digital goods as in that world of property. So property versus a service. And as you mentioned, states are having a difficult time catching up. It's not that they can't, you know, they can't understand it or anything like that. It's just that no legislator wants to be the signer of a bill that adds new things, you know, adds new taxes, right? So legislators are loath to add new taxes, but regulators, administrators are charged with getting more revenue using existing tax laws. So everybody wants more revenue. Nobody wants to take the hit for being the new tax guy. So states are in a bind here because they figured out how to tax software, and most states do tax software if it's canned, because they're calling it tangible property. But if it doesn't have any tangible property component, states are stuck, and they can't pass new tax laws, politically speaking, so they try to work it into their laws. So I'm sharing on my screen here a chart I produced about 3 or 4 months ago, Dan, for a presentation I did in Washington, D.C. And I was just trying to illustrate what are some of the bigger states' treatment of cloud computing. And so the question from your client had to do with where is SaaS taxable? And you could just answer that. But there's a lot of things you need to know. First of all, is it really SaaS? And if so, what are we talking about? Are you just charging for a software usage? Are you also including phone support? Or are you charging anything for setup, like installation? Those are some of the categories. I only shared some of the different categories that we track. But Dan, if I showed you a chart of software taxability, say Texas, it would say T all the way down, right? But here on this chart, I'm showing 80. So explain to our listeners why it would say 80.
Well, Texas has a provision for what's known as data processing services. It's a it's a catch-all that they passed one of the big tax overhauls. And what software as a service does is it, or what data processing is it's essentially anything that involves data input, data manipulation, printing, data storage. I mean, their idea was to write it as broadly as they could because they really wanted to catch this evolving area of digital services without having to deal with new issues every time the legislature convened.
I think that was 1987, Dan.
That sounds about right. One of the things that they did as part of it is only 80% of the charge is taxable. Now, sometimes you'll see that as a lesser dollar value charge. Sometimes you'll see the full dollar value charge, but at 80% of the tax rate, both will essentially get you to the same place.
All right. So Texas taxes software when it has a tangible component, and they were potentially going to miss out on tax of software when it's done as a SaaS model. And then they said, aha, let's call this data processing service, and then we only lose 20% of the revenues.
Exactly. That was the state managed to fit that right into their definition and still tax it accordingly.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to point out to our listeners that we maintain, we have an ebook for software sellers. And I don't mean anybody that's all they do is sell software. In this case, this client sells more than software, but software is one of their revenue components. And so we have written an ebook, a special report for software sellers that has this chart and more. I mean, when you look at what we track for software sales in terms of canned, custom, maintenance fees, and then the SaaS model, cloud computing, this is just a very brief snippet of what is actually covered. And the chart is kept up to date. So instead of a 4-month-old chart, which you can see and you could screen capture this if you're watching the video, but this chart is outdated now, and it's something that we stay on top of. So if this is of interest to you and you want to get deeper into this, then we just invite you. We'll post a link to where you can download the book yourself. Ryan will. and you can find this ebook, download it, and you'll be up to speed on the very latest taxability treatment, not only for canned and custom software, but for cloud computing. All right, Dan, any final comments you want to make?
One thing I would emphasize, especially with software as a service and even you had infrastructure as a service and platform as a service, which are more that relates more to like your Amazon Web Services and your big cloud-based platforms. Those areas are all, as I said, they're still very much kind of in flux. The states really are figuring out what to do. Illinois, for a long time, we thought was going to end up taxing those and advised our clients, as we always do, conservatively, to collect tax whenever there's an uncertain position. One day issued a letter ruling stating that they had decided that they were not going to tax SaaS. So the landscape really can and does change with these. Legislatures convene, the lobbying groups push their legislators to not charge tax. Some states trying to pick up a deal with the budget deficit would sometimes want to broaden the tax base and lower the tax. So there's always something changing, and particularly in the SaaS space, you want to keep a very close eye on it. Check back on your material states regularly just to see if the states have really changed anything.
Yep. It's a case where you should review the statute carefully.
Oh, yes. Again, unless you like those involuntary donations to the state on a regular basis.
All right, Dan. Well, that concludes our this week's episode of the Ecom Sales Tax Podcast. Thanks to you, Dan, for your contribution, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you.